You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 352 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman White Knight Presents Generation Joker number 5, Hawkgirl number 3, Green Lantern War Journal number 1, Batman Superman World's Finest number 19, Catwoman number 57, Nightwing number 106, Superman number 6, Titans number 3, and Wonder Woman number 1. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus. The only thing I got for DC News tonight is an article I came across online that says Warner Brothers could potentially be sold in the next 2 years to Universal. There are rumblings that Warner Brothers Pictures could potentially be sold, with Universal Pictures leading the candidate to make the purchase. Warner Brothers Pictures is currently a part of Warner Brothers Discovery, which has Discovery and the Max streaming service under its control. DC Studios is part of Warner Brothers, and it's the focus of a new feature that dwells into some behind-the-scenes drama regarding Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. Inside the Variety article is a reference to those on the Warner Brothers lot who believe the studio will be sold within the next 2 years, with Universal the most likely candidate. So, these are just rumors and rumblings, but I thought that was interesting because, you know, they were just bought not too long ago. They're going to be sold again, possibly? Thought that was a little crazy.
Well, I mean, yeah. I think, obviously, who knows? Again, like you said, that these are just rumors. But, I mean, it's pretty clear that the people at the top right now for not only Warner Brothers Discovery, but a lot of other businesses, they are really purely looking at numbers on a spreadsheet, Drew, and if you make the number bigger by selling it to someone else, that's what they're going to do. It has no bearing on what the, like, you know, thing that's better for the studio or for, you know, films continuing to be made. Does not matter in the slightest. Whatever is going to get the biggest dollar sign is the thing that's going to happen. It's pretty frustrating, man. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's pretty believable, right? Like, I wouldn't be shocked if they were to announce in a year, hey, you know, Discovery's decided they've had enough and they're going to sell it off. Would that surprise you? I don't think it would surprise me.
I guess it would. I think the sad thing is that everything's about the dollar sign and nothing, you know, creativity is kind of out the door right now. All we're seeing is rehashes of rehashes of rehashes. For the most
part. There's been too much. I agree, Drew, but I think one of the problems that we're seeing, though, is there's been so much consolidation that, you know, the people that are in charge of these things aren't people that are actually involved in whatever's actually going on, right? They're just the money makers at the top. If Warner Brothers was running itself, Drew, in a sense, you know, I think their primary concern would be films, right? But they're not. They're a smaller department, essentially, within a larger corporation, and all that corporation cares about is making money. And I know that that's capitalism, sure, whatever, but, you know, this is sort of the other side of that, which is, I mean, stuff's getting run into the ground, man, because, you know, all for the sake of the dollar. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, and we're seeing how that's affecting the box office, for sure.
Yeah, but, you know, obviously the solution is to, you know, consolidate more and trim the fat more, not focus on actually funding things and getting the right writers and right directors and right actors. That's not the solution, obviously, Drew. It's, you know, reconfiguring the board and acquiring new assets so that you can't fail because you own everything.
All right. Well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And we host the Watchathon Arassalon,
a podcast where we're watching through all of classic Doctor Who.
Nope, we've already done that.
We did? Well, then now what do we do?
What do we two do? We review New Who.
Ooh, we two review New Who?
We do, just for you.
Who?
Not you, them, the listeners of the podcast.
Ah.
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
Now we review New Who too.
Woohoo!
People keep asking, are we back? Yeah, I guess we're back. Back to talk about cigars, movies, TV shows, and any other nerdy topics here on the Cigar Nerds Podcast. Check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com and ESONetwork.com. And we have a YouTube channel at Cigar Nerd Podcast, where we do cigar reviews, live versions of the show, and any other dumb thing we think to record.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Batman. White Knight presents Generation Joker number 5. Bryce and Jackie are chasing after Riot in the Batmobile. Riot ramps her motorcycle over a bridge. The kids hit the eject button just before the Batmobile crashes. Riot snags the kids with a rope and grapple, saving them. Agent Prince wants to know where Riot and the kids have gone. Harley states she doesn't know. Agent Prince handcuffs Harley, stating it is for her own protection. Harley and Freeze are being escorted to the FBI field office for more questioning. Harley is confused when her and Victor do not make it to the field office, but instead they are escorted to Batman, who states they have got only a short time before the FBI realizes they didn't make it to the field office. Batman sends Harley on by herself to get the kids. Batman has found a way to take care of Jack once and for all, but needs Victor's help. He'll be right behind her. At the amusement park, Jack and Riot get into a fight because Jack doesn't want to reveal the truth. He's the one who took Two-Face from Arkham to experiment on. To be concluded.
The writing is just not up to par in this, Drew. It's just, I thought it was particularly notable in this issue. There were just some lines in this one that were just real clunkers, especially the Harley Quinn scenes, I thought were very poorly written. I understood the purpose that they were trying to serve, but the dialogue just felt very stilted and, like, it was not doing it for me. Like, I understood why the scene was there. I understood what the author was trying to do, but it was not well executed, in my opinion.
I'm just glad this thing's going to conclude soon. And it, you know, it keeps going back. They're bringing Jack back. It's just a fact anymore. Because why else would they do this little mini-series? And I'm just not excited about it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not, and I don't know that this story is... Drew, if you're going to do something like that's pretty major for the universe that this is set in, too, if they do bring him back, I wouldn't have put it in a side book. You know, I don't know. I wouldn't have done it at all to begin with, but... I guess that's a different conversation. It's been rough, man. It's been a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, considering how well done with the other books have been, so it just is. All right, well, let's move on to Hawk Girl number 3, Gotham Yesterday. Farlane Kandor watches as Ava Diaz's coffin is put into the ground and buried. Vulpecula is standing beside him. That afternoon, Farlane Kandor asks Bruce Wayne to join his board of directors. Farlane introduces Bruce to his VP of Finance, Ava Diaz. While the two talk, Bruce discreetly scans a ninth metal feather on Farlane's desk. After the dinner rush is over, Alasia takes a break from the Red Eye Cafe. She runs into a masked gang calling themselves the Croc Block. They're going to take all the money she has on her and in her register. Hawkgirl descends from the sky, claiming she is Batman, and takes out the leader. Galaxy punches another of the gang members, stating she is not a Robin. Hawkgirl tells her she can be Nightwing. Galaxy argues that Nightwing is a Robin. Hawkgirl tells her then she can be Batgirl, and Galaxy disagrees, stating that Batgirl is still a Robin. Alasia joins the fight and thanks the women for helping her. She invites them to stop by the diner anytime for a meal. She's the head chef and it will be on the house. Hawkgirl and Galaxy meet with Batman in the Batcave. Batman states that he doesn't have anything credible on Velpecula, and she is either a low-level con woman with a strong facial resemblance, or she is hundreds of years old. Batman tells Hawkgirl that her lost feather triggered a memory about an old colleague that has a feather displayed on his desk that's identical to hers. It's also made of Nth metal. Batman scanned it while he was talking to one of his employees, Ava Diaz. Hawkgirl's surprised to learn that Ava Diaz is alive. Batman was just investigating her murder 2 days ago. Hawkgirl saw pictures of her body. Batman does not have any memory of that. And for our listeners, that was back in issue number one. Because I went back and checked because I didn't remember who Ava Diaz was. Batman reveals that Farlane's feather revealed to be 40 years older than the ones on Hawkgirl's back. If the timeline is being altered, Vulpecula is more powerful and more dangerous than any of them suspected. They decide to pay Farlane Kandor a visit. Batman, Hawkgirl, and Galaxy crash through the skylight of a party. Farlane and Valpulcula are waiting for them with an army of Talons. The heroes battle, defeating the Talons. Vulpecula stabs Farlane with a Nth dagger that transforms him into a giant humanoid owl. Hawkgirl takes on the giant owl while Batman tries to grab Vulpecula. Vulpecula uses magic to multiply herself and escapes. While Hawkgirl is battling the giant owl, he turns to dust. A Nth metal feather is left behind. Batman leaves after the fight is over. Hawkgirl and Galaxy go to the Red Eye Cafe for dinner. Elsewhere, Vulpecula tells the transformed Marine from issue number one that Gotham was fun, but is glad to be back in Metropolis. Next, Vulpecula wants to raise Metropolis to the ground.
Drew, I liked this issue a little bit more than the first two. I think it's because Hawkgirl was finally actually the main character of the comic. So that was refreshing. I liked the Court of Owls cameo. That fight was pretty cool with the giant owl creature. So there were some things that I enjoyed a little bit more in this issue, but it's still not quite landing for me. The villain is interesting. I think I've said that every time. I'm very interested in the villain. I like, you know, with the scenes that we've had with her and whatever she's up to has me intrigued. Like, there are parts of this comic, Drew, that are intriguing, and I really would like to enjoy this comic. We so rarely get a Hawkgirl comic. I would love it to be good, and it's not quite done it. This was a step in the right direction. I don't know if there's enough time, though. There's only 3 issues left.
I enjoyed this issue better than the other two also. I loved the Hawkgirl falling from the sky and saying she's Batman. I thought that was hilarious. And then them arguing about, you could be Robin, you could be Nightwing, you could be Batgirl. I just found that funny. I like Batman in this also. I realized, you know, we had Batman in it before, but he didn't, you know, it wasn't really a major part. And he doesn't have to be a major part. But they did more stuff with Batman in this issue, and I like that. Not that Batman needs to be a part of this miniseries, but, you know, it added something because, you know, they're Justice League teammates. He's a detective. It only makes sense that she'd go to him for help. So I like that. And I also like the battle with the Talons. I thought that was pretty cool. And this issue seemed to have a little more humor in it. So I like that too. But I have to agree with you, you know, overall, it's not quite hitting the mark. But it's interesting, the mystery with this villain too, because now we got the possibility of time travel introduced. So I'm intrigued to see where that goes.
Yeah, the villain to me is still the most intriguing part of this. The sort of Faustian deals that she's been making, I'm a sucker for those kind of stories. So like that appeals to me. Like you just mentioned, Drew, that possibility of time travel, obviously, we'll probably get more depth and information in a couple of issues that are coming up, but it seemed possible that the deals that we've been seeing made were made decades ago, right? But they might not have been made relatively, like, within this realm of time travel that long ago. It seemed like there was the possibility that she was, like, going back, making that deal, and then jumping right back to where she was. So for her, she's not been waiting decades for this to come to fruition. That she's just been, you know what I mean? Like, she goes back, makes a deal with someone, and then pops back to where she is. That would be really interesting if that was the case.
That would be interesting. And then it would also make sense how they've been portraying those flashbacks and the present stuff, too, in the comics. Because, you know, in a lot of these comics, we see the flashback at the beginning of the issue, and then immediately her getting the payout on that. So it could also explain that as well. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Green Lantern War Journal Number 1. In orbit around Earth, a space station is hit with a burst of purple light. One of the astronauts, Jane, is working on the outside of the space station. Her tether gets cut. Jane spots a purple ring, and it speaks to her. The space station is venting oxygen, and they need Jane to turn the valve. Engrossed with the ring, Jane is transformed. Earth. John Stewart is fixing the plumbing under his mother's kitchen sink. John senses a Green Lantern and goes outside. Lantern Varon of the reorganized Green Lantern Corps of the United Planets places John Stewart under the arrest for the unlawful possession of a power ring. Lantern Varon states that the house and all its residents are under arrest. Without a ring, John summons the energy of willpower and beats the crap out of Lantern Varon. When Lantern Varon yields, John gives him a message. Tell the United Planets and the other fake lanterns that he doesn't have a ring. He doesn't owe them anything, and if any of them come looking for another fight, John will show them what a real lantern can do. John punches Lantern Varon as hard as he can, sending him into orbit. John heads back into the house. When his mother asks again when his little sister will be home, John creates a construct of her. John's mother seems to be either in denial about the situation or has the beginnings of Alzheimer's. In the orbit above Earth, Lantern Shepherd, who is from another dimension, finds the remains of the space station. Lantern Shepherd finds Radiant dead aboard and battles them. Shepherd's ring tells him to quit wasting time and head to Earth to find the Radiant Queen. The only way to stop the Radiant dead is to kill their queen, who is on the search for John Stewart.
True, I didn't recognize all of this comic, so it was a little unclear to me whether I just didn't remember, and all of this is a reprint from the backups, or just bits and pieces of it were, because the John Stewart confrontation in the lawn, we definitely read. And then we've seen the character, the other lantern that pops up at the end of the story, we saw in the backups right before this. I guess my question is, did I completely forget the first couple of backups? And we've completely read this story before, or did they make a weird, like, the backups were almost like a trailer or sneak preview for this series?
I'm unsure, Cletus, because I read this thinking that the sink stuff was a little familiar, but I couldn't remember.
The confrontation in the lawn, we for sure 100% read, but I couldn't remember if we've read all of it or not. And that was, I was very, Drew, honestly, I was confused because I really didn't remember anything from the opening sequence with the space station. That felt new. I thought we were going where we left off, that at the end of the backups that we read, the ring hopped universes, right? And I thought that ring was in the new universe doing stuff. And maybe it is, I don't know. But I'm now confused because then the scenes that followed, at least some of them, were scenes that we had seen before. And now, if I'm being completely honest, Drew, I don't think that the story is confusing. The only reason I'm confused is because we read these other backups, and now I don't know what I'm supposed to, where are we? What has happened already? Are we starting back from zero? And it's like we didn't read the backups? This was way more confusing than I was expecting. And to be clear, the story itself is mysterious, right? But is straightforward. It's not that the story is confusing. It's only confusing in terms of previously published stories. Now, I really don't know what the answer is here, Drew.
When I read this, some of it did feel a little familiar, but I couldn't honestly remember what I'd read before about John Stewart fixing the kitchen and sink and stuff. You're right, I think we have seen that before. That stuff in the opening sequence was all new. I hadn't seen any of that before.
I really didn't remember that, but that's the problem, Drew. That opening sequence, I was all in. I was, because I remember I left the backups feeling pretty optimistic about this. And then that opening sequence was really good. And I was like, oh, this is good. I'm into this. And then we had the scene with the kitchen, which, to be clear, is a good scene. It's, I have no problem with it. But I was like, wait a second. Is this the Penguin issue zero all over again? Like, have I read this?
No, it's clearly, to me, it's clearly new, but it's not new. Because, honestly, the Jon Stewart stuff, I think we read an expanded version of it. I think there was more to it than what was in this issue. I think they might have plopped a certain portion of it into this issue. Because that kitchen sink stuff looked very familiar to me. I honestly don't remember another lantern coming to him, but obviously you remember it. So
putting him in chains, I remember that line vividly of don't put me in chains. I vividly remember that scene. And then the lantern that we see at the end is the lantern that we saw also. But then, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know, man. I left with more questions than I expected from this issue. I'm looking forward to issue two because I am still intrigued in the story, Drew, but I'm also really intrigued to see, like, what the hell's going on exactly with this. Are we about to reread a bunch of stuff? If that's the case, Drew, that's a horrible decision on their part.
I don't think we're going to be rereading stuff moving forward because it felt like we were going into something new. I don't remember.
But see, here's the thing that's confusing, though, Drew, is that scene where John tells them not to put him in chains and he shows that he still has the Green Lantern power without the ring. I know we've read that scene, and unless I'm misremembering, it's the same John Stewart that we read in the backups, who we learned by the end was not the, quote, main John Stewart, right? It was an alternate version of him. And so if that's the same scene, that's the same alternate John. And so we still have to get at some point to the main. I thought it was yours too, was that this ring was moving into the main DC universe. We were going to see that John deal with it. And now I just have a lot of questions. Like, did I get that wrong? Like, what's going on here?
That other John we saw, though, had godlike powers. This John just seems to be able to manipulate willpower without a ring. I'm pretty sure it's two different Johns. Now, we saw Lantern Shepherd come here and find the space station broke up. He is coming to Earth Zero. We saw that in the backup last week, that Lantern Shepherd was coming to Earth Zero. That happened here. That's why I think the space station and the stuff at the end of the comic is all new. So, Lantern Shepherd is here. What confused me was, when we saw the purple ring at the end of the last backup, I didn't expect it to be a ring that's tied to the Radiant Queen. Apparently, she has that purple power ring, was what it seemed like to me, and she could make zombie peoples from it.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was... Yeah, I definitely had picked up on... I didn't know necessarily when we were reading her that she was wielding a ring, but by the end of that story, that ring was clearly tied to her power.
Okay, see, I didn't get that. I thought it was coming from somewhere else, so guess that makes sense. It'll be interesting to see what issue two looks like.
Yeah, I'm still interested in the story just on its own right, but I am doubly intrigued now, Drew, just to be like, I really want to fully understand what the plan is with this book and in regards to the backup, because I don't know, it seems a little less clear that the backup was setting up this story now, Drew. It feels almost like it was an extended teaser.
Well, I'm interested in seeing where this goes, because I'm interested in how it's going to tie, this series is going to tie in with the other Green Lantern title, because the other Green Lantern title is focused on Hal and stuff that's going on Earth. I wonder if this is going to let us know what's going on in the rest of the galaxy with the Green Lanterns. Obviously, the United Planets have a new Green Lantern Corps, and I'm interested to see if John's mission is to bring back the old Lanterns, or how he's going to deal with these new Lanterns, or, you know, what's all going on. Is Lantern Shepherd going to end up staying here? Lots of questions. And it's kind of exciting that we've got two different Green Lantern titles going on with lots of questions in each of them, where I have a vested interest in to see what's going to happen. I don't know. I haven't been this excited about Green Lantern for quite a while.
Yeah, I agree, Drew. I'm very enthusiastic about where we're at with the Green Lantern characters. This is, like you said, it's been quite the dry spell for just books with these characters in the first place, and then just, you know, quality classic Green Lantern stories. We haven't really gotten them in a while. I'm in love with the Hal Jordan one. Like, that one is so through three. I know it's only three issues. We got to see it keep doing it, but my God, it's so good. And the Jon Stewart one's really intriguing, Drew. And it still seems like it's a Green Lantern story and not a, how can we use Jon Stewart but not tell a Green Lantern story, which is what some of them have felt like, which has been really frustrating because what is so wrong with Jon Stewart just being a Green Lantern, Drew? Like, he's a cool character. Green Lantern, in my opinion, is a very cool concept for a character. Why do we have to, you know, break the mold and do something different? Like, just tell a story with him as a Green Lantern. This looks like we might be getting something along those lines, and that's really exciting. This is the most optimistic I've been about the Green Lantern franchise, so to speak, in a while.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman, Superman, World's Finest, number 19. Gotham, years ago. Jax Err continues to battle Superman, telling him that Batman is trapped in the Phantom Zone. In the Phantom Zone, Alfred tells Batman that this place is a prison used by Kryptonians to exile criminals incapable of reform or remorse. Normally, it's inescapable, but Alfred noticed a slight weakening of its walls, allowing breaches that have swallowed up other Gothamites, including himself. Jax Err admits to Superman that he thought the portals were random at first, but he discovered a pattern and used that to escape. Using telepathy, Jax Err put Riddler under his control and drew Superman to where the next breach would open. His original plan was to switch places with Superman, but when that failed, he switched with Batman instead. Realizing that Superman is more powerful than him because of his years on Earth, Jax Err goes into hiding to build up solar energy. In the meantime, Batman and Superman devise a plan. Drawing out Jax Err, Superman tries to trick Jax Err into going into the Phantom Zone breach. His plan fails. Stating that neither is a threat to him, Jax Err pulls Batman out of the Phantom Zone. Jax Err goes to the Fortress of Solitude and attacks the bottled city of Kandor with his heat vision. Superman and Batman follow. Superman attacks Jax Err, defending Kandor. Alfred contacts Batman, letting him know that he has found the cause of the breaches in the Phantom Zone. A cloaked alien being is there working some sort of device. Batman locates the Phantom Zone projector and tries to use it on Jax Err. Jax Err takes it, laughing. Jax Err breaks the projector and realizes it's a decoy. Superman has rigged the floor with the projector circuitry. Jax Err is returned to the Phantom Zone. The Gothamites are returned from the Phantom Zone, and Superman helps capture the Riddler. Epilogue. The cloaked alien returns to the Phantom Zone. Aether, the Messiah, promises to release these tormented souls from this purgatory, angry at what monster would allow such eternal suffering to exist. To be continued in the pages of Action Comics in 2024. And then next month, Batman and Superman journey to the world of Kingdom Come.
I like this, Drew. This was a good wrap-up to the story. Wade did some cool nods. You can see in more ways than just, obviously it's literally their first meeting, but the way that he portrays the characters, I thought he does a good job of not just telling you this is the first time that they're meeting, but I think he does a really good job of showing it, right? Superman isn't great at fighting because he's never really had to be at that point, right? He's always just been vastly more powerful than anybody he's ever faced. And so the moment that Jax gets equal level power, Superman is in trouble because he's never had to actually fight. So you see that there. You see other references to Batman giving Superman a rundown, like, hey, FYI, my villains are not normally, relatively speaking, this benevolent. They're a little bit more messed up. And that, you know what I mean? Like, there were cool little moments in there that I thought Wade, you know, kind of expertly weaved in to not, again, not just say, hey, this is their first meeting and then tell a story, but you can see it in the way that the characters act and the way that the story plays out.
We even see Batman offer to train Superman in some fighting techniques there towards the end of the issue.
Yep.
So pretty cool. And the villain that Alfred introduced, that cloaked alien, looks like is going to be in Action Comics, in upcoming Action Comics issues next year. So kind of sneaky that they introduced it here in this title, and we'll see be seeing it taken over by different writers and artists in Action Comics in the future. It's also interesting that Wade's going to revisit Kingdom Come, because we've had that hinted at before, and looks like he's going to be telling that story soon.
Yeah, I'm curious to check out this new story, Drew. It's obviously I don't think Kingdom Come personally is a story that needs to be revisited. I feel like it stands incredibly well on its own. If anybody is going to revisit it, though, the guy that wrote the story is probably the guy to do it, right? So in that sense, I can't complain. It's his story to begin with. So if he thinks it's worth revisiting, more power to him.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Catwoman number 57. Batman is upset that Vandal Savage has taken his home legally. Batman stops at his parents' gravesite and tells them of his failure. Catwoman addresses her crew at their new training grounds. Red Hood shows up and learns he will be guiding a team outside of a gala for the arts. He will be outside running valet. Batman learns from the Riddler, through riddles of course, that Catwoman has a big score planned for tonight at the Gotham Ballet. Batman confronts Red Hood, yanking him off his motorcycle with a grappling hook. Red Hood tells Batman that he has more in common with Catwoman than he does Batman. Red Hood is with Catwoman because he believes in her, not to spite Batman. Batman injects Red Hood with a needle and he passes out. Batman takes him back to one of his micro caves. Catwoman is dancing when suddenly someone cuts in. It is Vandal Savage. He warns Catwoman to stay out of his way, but if she wants the bat brought to his knees, then he is in need of a powerful lieutenant. Vandal Savage tells her to consider it because Catwoman may find herself short of good help very soon. Marquis is not happy about helping Vandal Savage, but he is her father. To be continued in Batman number 138. We have this Batman-Catwoman war going on, but it feels like maybe Vandal Savage is going to be the real villain here, that they're all going to have to come together to beat.
Yeah, I agree completely, Drew, and it feels... I almost want that to be wrong, because that feels so predictable, and they revealed it so early. You know what I mean, Drew? It just... I already wasn't interested in this story, but this is so often, anytime they have these, right? Like Batman versus Robin, or Batman versus Catwoman, whatever. Or the movie Batman versus Superman, they're always like, oh no, it's about the two heroes. Then, oh, just kidding, actually, there's a real villain. How many times have we seen that story, Drew, throughout the history of comics? Yeah, I mean, it feels pretty clear that that's where the story is going. I would love for them to pull the rug and for it to be about something else. That would be a pleasant surprise in some ways. But I'd be surprised if that was the case. I'm not going to lie. So one thing I wanted to talk about, Drew, I get, because this is Catwoman's book, I could understand them portraying Catwoman's side of the argument as the right side of the argument, because it's her book and you're getting it from her perspective. The only thing that I have a hang up with, though, there, Drew, is that I feel like the other books have also portrayed her as right. Like, I don't feel like when we get Batman's book that he's being portrayed as the one that's correct. You know what I mean? I feel like we're getting the general sense across all of these that Selina is in the right here, and that whatever Bruce is doing is wrong, regardless of whether it's Selina's book or not.
Yeah, you're not the only one that feels that way. I've noticed the same thing.
To be clear, if we were just getting it in Selina's book, I would understand it, Drew. It would make complete sense. It's her book. Give it from her perspective. And it is a... Theoretically, this is supposed to be something where it's a gray area. It's not clear which side is right. And so I think a smart way to do this book would be to have books showing both sides, right? Where you see from Catwoman's perspective, you see the positives and you see the negatives of Bruce's side in that. But then you look at Bruce's book, you get the opposite of that. I think that could work. I don't know what it would look like, Drew, but I think that could work. But I feel like pretty uniformly it's all been, relatively speaking, pretty pro-Selina. And to be clear, my problem isn't that the book is picking Selina over Bruce. It's that Selina's argument to me seems so patently antithetical to what superheroes are supposed to be about.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I can't imagine a story where the roles were reversed and Bruce was the one arguing for it, obviously, right? But just to be clear, if in some bizarro world, it was the roles were reversed and Bruce was the one arguing for this, I would have the same problem with it. It's not that Catwoman's the one pushing this idea forward that's the problem. It's the idea itself. It really is just not landing with me. And I know it's supposed to be subjective, and I get that, but I don't feel like the books as a whole feel that way. I feel like they're pretty across the board. They all generally agree that crime is okay as long as you target a specific group. And we've talked at length about how problematic that is.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we kind of see something like that unfold in the Wonder Woman book this week. So, yeah, yeah, which I'm eager to talk about, but we'll get on to that later. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Nightwing number 106. Bloodhaven, 2 years ago, Rick Grayson is being followed by a man that used to be in the circus with Dick when he was younger. The man gives Rick a package, the prodigal bar. Rick doesn't want to open the envelope because it's not for him. He wants to keep it safe somewhere, but not in a bank in Bloodhaven. 2 nights later, Bia has invited the quartermaster. He tells Rick that it will be kept in locker 538. Rick has it put under the name Nightwing. Now, Titan's Tower, Bloodhaven. It's 5 in the evening. Babs is trying to get Dick up if he is going to go out on patrol. Haley comes running into his bedroom, followed by Beast Boy in his dog form. Both of them jump on his bed. Dick explains that a couple of weeks ago, a strange sailor told him that there was a box with his name on it. It's protected by some kind of secret society in an old ship in an underground cavern called the Hold. Heartless shows up at the Hold stating that he would like to make a withdrawal. The quartermaster appears and has his sword drawn. He tells Heartless to put down his master of arms. When Heartless attacks the quartermaster shoves the sword through his chest. Heartless ignores the sword in his chest and picks up the quartermaster by the neck. Using his special drill, Heartless kills the quartermaster. Heartless calls for Zucco and the two descend the stairs. Both are surprised to learn that the Hold is gone. An hour later, Nightwing has joined the commissioner at the crime scene. Her department has been hunting Heartless for weeks, but have found nothing but a trail of bodies. Nightwing and the Titans haven't seen a trace of him since the prison break. Oracle informs Nightwing that the paramedics took the bodies, but the medics are not in Bloodhaven's medical system. Nightwing chases after the ambulance on his motorcycle. Nightwing boards the ambulance while Oracle takes control of his motorcycle. When Nightwing has taken care of the guards, Oracle tells him that the GPS shows him in the harbor. When Nightwing exits the ambulance, he is on a boat. Tons of sailors have guns pointed at him, but Captain Blood tells them to lower their weapons. It's Rick Grayson's old girlfriend, Bia. To be continued. We also had a backup story in this, Breakfast for Dinner, Part 1 of 3. The Batgirl's Loft. Dick Grayson and Cassandra are sparring. When they finish, Dick teaches Cass how to make pancakes. Outside their apartment, Mr. Hatch is spying on them through the window. He is talking on the phone to a gang called the Three Bears. Seems like they are planning to kidnap Dick Grayson for his money. Stephanie comes home from being on patrol as Batgirl. She is very happy to be having breakfast for dinner. Mr. Hatch notices that another girl has mysteriously appeared in the apartment and wonders how many girls that Dick Grayson is dating. Stephanie closes the blinds and Mr. Hatch decides they will make their move another night.
Drew, I'm very intrigued by this. I know we've been seeing in previews of some of the other, at the backs of other issues, that we're going to get essentially a pirate Dick Grayson for a bit, or pirate Nightwing, and that's pretty exciting.
I know, that's going to be pretty cool.
I'm pretty juiced up for this story, I'm not going to lie. I thought this was a really good intro to the storyline. It got me hooked right away, no surprise. I mean, this whole run has just been phenomenal. The other thing that this book is doing, Drew, that I like what Taylor's trying to do here is the Rick Grayson storyline was horrendous, right? I'm sure some people liked it, and if you did, I'm glad you did. I thought it was terrible. But B was obviously the main love interest throughout that. And at the end of that arc, when they restored Dick Grayson and restored him to being Nightwing, they just sort of wrote her off, right? Like, she had been this maiden character. She had been a major love interest. And then the comic just sort of, like, wipes her away. And it's like, yeah, she's not that important. She was basically just there to be loved by Dick, right? Like, that's not great depth for a character, one might argue. And I really like what Taylor is doing here, Drew, in trying to make that character, you know, B be more and exist outside of the sphere of Dick Grayson, right? Like, she has her own life. Actually, she's a pretty cool character. Look, she's a pirate. I don't know. I respect what he's trying to do there, Drew.
I like it, too, and I'm expecting that we're going to get a fairly good story from Tom Taylor about Bea the Pirate, so I'm excited to see where that goes. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Superman number 6. Lex Luthor is rushed to the hospital after being beaten last issue. 2 weeks later, Leslie Willis, Livewire, has a new Daily Planet podcast from prison thanks to editor-in-chief Lois Lane. Superman stops an armored car heist and drops the vehicle in front of the Metropolis PD, but doesn't stick around to chat like he usually does. Clark updates Lois, who is overwhelmed at the Daily Planet. Lex is in a coma. Clark can't believe that Farm and Graff manipulated Parasite and Silver Banshee so that he couldn't hear when Lex was in trouble. Graff also warned Superman about something called Project Chain that was a skeleton in Lex's closet. Superman returns to Supercorps. Mercy was unable to find anything on Project Chain. Superman accesses the LL01 hologram and learns that Project Chain was an early experiment in security intended to house the most dangerous people in the world indefinitely. It would keep them alive while also restraining them in deep solitary confinement, deprived of all senses and connections with the outside world. Only one version of the prison cell was completed, hidden 400 feet below Stryker's Island. It contains one who is still imprisoned, alive and contained within. Furious that Luthor could have imprisoned an innocent person, Superman finds and opens the prison. Lex Luthor wakes up, calling for Superman to save him. Lex's prisoner takes off flying with chains around him. Superman chases after him. The prisoner asks Superman if Lex gave him powers too. The prisoner traps Superman in the prison. The chain is unleashed in next month's oversized Superman 850 Legacy numbering.
It was an issue of Superman, all right, Drew?
Yes, it was. That was so telegraphed that when Superman went down there to release what was in there, I knew it was going to be something he wouldn't want to release. The Chained. Okay, Williamson. It basically seemed like a Superman-like character with chains around his neck.
Pretty clever character design when you think about it, Drew.
Yep.
What if Superman but bad? I can't believe no one's ever thought of that before.
I know.
It's crazy.
Yeah. You would think they'd do something with characters like Bizarro and Cyborg Superman and
yeah, but
and even General Zod.
Bad, Drew. They're Superman but bad. There's distinct difference. whatever. I honestly didn't get that upset in this reading this one. It just sort of, I read it and I moved on, which I think is about the best praise I can give a Williamson comic.
I can't argue with you there. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Titans number 3, The Church of Eternity. Nightwing and Beast Boy sneak their way into the church to find the congregation in the middle of a sacrifice to Trigon. The heroes interfere, saving the girl. The congregation begins dipping themselves into the pool of blood and becoming more powerful. Nightwing calls the rest of the Titans, and a battle ensues. As the Titans subdue the followers, Tempest shows up. Tempest finds Brother Eternity tied up and gagged. He was to be sacrificed to Trigon also. The Titans invite Tempest to rejoin them, but he refuses, stating he believes in Brother Eternity's vision of all people leaving Earth. Garth no longer believes that this world can survive humanity. An hour later at Titan's Tower, the Flash reveals that he stole a meteor from a secret room in the church. Back at the church, Brother Eternity realizes his meteor is missing. Brother Eternity instructs Tempest to go visit his friends. Brother Eternity tells Tempest to open his mouth, and a plant exits it and goes into Tempest's mouth. To be continued.
This was funny timing reading this, Drew, fresh off of the finale of the Titans TV show. Obviously, the two did not coincide when they actually came out, but I'm enjoying the Titans run so far, Drew. I'm very curious as what the relaunched version of Brother Blood is up to. That ending scene was one of the creepiest panels I think I've ever seen in a comic, Drew.
It was creepy. I was like, what is that plant thing? Obviously, that could be what's controlling Brother Eternity, or maybe Brother Eternity is using it to control Tempest. It's obvious that Brother Eternity hasn't changed his colors, and I'm wondering what's up with this meteor. Is he getting powers from it or something, or I don't know.
Or did the thing that's controlling him get it come from the meteor? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that could have been possible, too. Interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our last issue for this week, Wonder Woman number 1. In a pool hall in West Billings, Montana, a woman retaliates after being touched by a man while trying to shoot pool. The news reports that 19 men were murdered in a massacre, but only two women survived, Marie Carey and Nora Sheridan. The two women were untouched by the perpetrator. It was confirmed by the Amazonian ambassador that the main suspect in the Montana slayings is an Amazon citizen. She was in the United States on a work visa and was engaged in charitable work with indigenous people in the area. The Amazon embassy has had no contact with her and are in the dark as to her whereabouts. The news reports that some people are saying that the attack at the pool hall was not a one-time incident, but an attack by the Amazons on American values, with the word terrorism being thrown around. This leads the United States government to pass the Amazon Safety Act that was signed into law by the president. The Amazons are now banned from U.S. soil. Sergeant Steele is called in to lead a task force called the Amazon Extradition Entity, or AXE. This task force was created for Amazons that refused to leave. As we see in one example, a lesbian couple that had adopted a daughter refused to leave. The Amazon named Nix fought against the task force and was gunned down by the soldiers. The other woman is arrested and the daughter is taken. Wonder Woman is ordered back to Themyscira by Queen Nubia but refuses, only returning her sword to avoid temptation. Sergeant Steele and Axe corner Wonder Woman in a cemetery where she is praying over the fallen. Wonder Woman states that her sisters had nothing to do with this tragedy. Wonder Woman is here in Montana because there are lies. An assassin tries to shoot Wonder Woman in the head, but she deflects the bullet with her bracelet. Wonder Woman battles against Axe without taking any lives. When the battle is over, Wonder Woman states that she is doing what they have failed to do. She is looking for Emily, the woman that killed these men. She is going to find out why she has done this horrible thing. The Lasso of Truth reveals that the assassin was ordered to take out Wonder Woman without giving her a chance to surrender. When Sergeant Steele calls her the B-word and tries to punch her, Wonder Woman catches Sergeant Steele's metal fist in her hand and crushes it. A warrant is issued for Wonder Woman's arrest. While talking with Steve Trevor, Diana reveals that the order given to Sergeant Steele did not come from a general or the president. It came from a man named the Sovereign, who really runs America with his lasso of lies. To be continued.
Andrew, I loved this issue. This was such a good opener. I was hooked immediately. I cannot wait to read more of this story. On the same hand, I guarantee, as soon as I read this, I'm like, oh, there are going to be some dudes on the internet that hate this comic. And I'm kind of okay with that because I think they probably, if they were paying attention, could see themselves in the comic. Man, I'm all in on this story, Drew. I loved this issue.
You're not the only one that loved this issue. I did too. I like the story it's telling. What we've got is we have an incident that happens and we have some of the American people who have taken the story and twisted it. You have one incident that becomes, we have to ban a whole group of people from the United States. It goes all the way up to the presidency where a law is signed into order. We see a task force organized and people getting removed out of the country. It's a very interesting story. And I'm very interested in seeing where this goes. Now, the other thing that's interesting is the story is also showing us that there is a secret group that's basically running America from behind the scenes with this lasso of lies, which, you know, is a weapon that's in contrast to the lasso of truth. So I'm curious to see that how that pans out. What is very interesting is I read through the comic like I normally do. Then I went back to the beginning and I read only the text boxes. Those text boxes was from the point of view of the Sovereign. And we learn right away that the Sovereign is going to be defeated by Wonder Woman. They state it to us. It's a fact. And this is basically them telling us their story. So we already know Wonder Woman's going to win. Tom King has told us. We're going to get to see the journey of how that happens. Very interested in reading this series.
Yeah. And honestly, Drew, I like the fact that the book just comes out and says, like, look, Wonder Woman's going to win this. We all know that, right? And I like that King's not going to essentially try to BS you and be like, oh, she might lose this one. It's Wonder Woman's comic. It's Wonder Woman. She's going to win. And I love that the comic is like, yeah, okay, so she's going to win. But it's about the journey, not the destination, Drew. Yeah, I like that. I like this idea. Obviously, it kind of depends on how you write it. It's Tom King, so I like the way that he's writing it. But the idea of this lasso of lies in Williamson's hands, for example, Drew, I think it would be one of the dumbest things I've ever read, if I'm being completely honest, because I think he would write it very cheesy, very obvious, right? But to me, the difference is in writers is obviously the story is focused on this lasso of lies, right? But if you go and read the issue, you can see all of these falsehoods pushing the story forward, right? It's not just that this dude has a different colored lasso and then Wonder Woman pulls out her lasso and they lasso fight against each other, right? Which is what I think Williamson would do. Instead, you're getting this, the core of the story is lies, right? Everybody on the news is pushing this lie that all of the Amazons are responsible. The Sergeant Steele is the opposite of honest in all of his interactions, right? And in some, I shouldn't say all, but in a lot of his interactions. And you can see, and then it gets to the core and it's this lasso. It's sort of a physical symbol of what the story has already been showing you up to that point.
I'm very curious what the truth is of what happened in that bar. I mean, that's what Wonder Woman's whole mission is going to be through her journey here, is finding out what that truth is and turning around what has happened to the Amazons and her. Oh, man, it was very sad to see that scene with the lesbian couple when Sergeant Steele comes there to basically take them away forcefully.
Oh, it's, you know, brutal.
It was brutal. And, you know, the Amazon Nyx getting gunned down. Oof. Now they have special bullets that can kill Amazons. But from what I gathered was those bullets wouldn't work against Wonder Woman.
The thing I liked about the scene is that it really helped, I think, fully establish the emotional stakes of the story, right? Like, again, I'm not saying I enjoyed seeing Amazons get killed. That's not what I'm reading for. But you know what I mean? Like, it makes the story mean something. Like, real consequences are happening. It's the same reason why I really liked the War of Jokes and Riddles, for example, right? Or Killing Time, where King, I feel like, more so than a lot of other comic writers, really focuses on what the actual human impact of what these superheroic actions and all of the whatever supervillain plots. You see all these terrible, horrendous things that they do frequently in many comics, but they always, you know, they're labeled evil, right? Like, it's not like the book is giving them a pass, but they just sort of glaze over it, right? And I feel like King, more so than most other writers that we're reading right now, Drew, does a really good job of, like, getting into really making you, the reader, be confronted with how evil that actually is, right? Like, it's not just that, oh, someone died off screen. He shows it to you. He's like, no, it's not just that they're forcefully making Amazons go back home. They're ripping children away from them. Like, this isn't, you don't get off easy on this. This is how evil this is, and you've got to be confronted with that. I like that he does that with his stories, and it makes, to me, it gives the stories better depth and gives, you know, a better, honestly, it gives you more reason to root for Wonder Woman, right? Like, obviously, I'm going to root for her anyway. She's Wonder Woman. But, like, I don't know about you, Drew, but, like, I wanted her to kick Sarge Steele's ass by the end of this issue. That was all I wanted, was to see her punch him in the face.
And she didn't, but she crushed his fist.
And that was so sad. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to be a cool scene no matter what. But, like, how satisfying is that given all of the emotional stakes leading up to that? That's the thing about King's writing that I love, is that, dude, I wanted that so bad. When she crushes his hand, it's like, ah, let's go. Like, I was pumped up. That's, other writers can do this too. Don't get me wrong. It's not that King is the only one that does this, but he is so good at really pulling you into the story. And again, building those stakes and making you feel what these other characters are feeling, that it's not just this superficial good guy versus bad guy. Like, it is still that, right? Like, ultimately, if you really want to break it down, it's Wonder Woman versus a dude with an evil lasso, right? But that's not just what the story is. It goes in the details and the nuance that goes into that makes it so much more interesting.
Even though it's a fantastical story, it's grounded in reality. I mean, we even see one Amazon. We see that it looks like she gave herself up. And then in the next scene, we see she's shot in the back of the head. I mean, that was brutal, too.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, you could take an incident like this happening, making it some sort of ethnical group or, you know, from a group of people from a certain country or whatnot. You could have the same thing happen and see this happening to that group of people where they're exiled from the United States. That's how I feel like it's grounded in reality, because you could see this actually happening to a group of people that live in the United States.
Easily. That was the thing that got me the most about this, Drew, is that, like, if obviously they're not real, but if Amazons were real and Themyscira was real and they had an embassy in the U.S. and something like that happened, I mean, obviously the fantastical, you know, King with the lasso thing, whatever, but, like, that felt pretty realistic to me. Like, I could see that happening. I'm not going to lie. Like, that's what kind of really got me with the story, is, like, it felt real. And again, I know it's a fantastic story, but it hit home.
All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. We have no DC TV or movies this week, so we're going to come back and close out the show.
Tune in to The Con Guys Show. Con, as in Comic-Con. We are Hollywood filmmakers and super fans who cover all the news of the con universe, including the films, the TV shows, the streaming series, the experiences, and the events that fuel your fandom. If you'd find it at Comic-Con, then you'll find it here. Now in our seventh year, The Con Guys Show is a proud member of the ESO Network.
Pardon the interruption. We'll bring you back to your podcast in just a moment. But first, promo for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Here on the ESO Network, three hosts recommend this podcast.
I recommend it.
I recommend it.
And I recommend it.
On the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, it's a slice of life as we discuss literally anything in the universe. Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Here to serve all of your needs.
Wednesday, I'm here with you people. It's, like, wild.
No pizzas were harmed in the creation of this podcast.
And we're back. All right, Cliss, do you have a shout-out for this week?
I do. I want to give a quick reverse shout-out to the Rick Grayson era. Please don't read that. Just do a quick like Wikipedia summary, something. Just get a quick like refresher if you need it for this next arc. And then go back to enjoying actually good Nightwing comic. For my actual shout-out, though, at the end of Catwoman, we get the reveal that Catwoman's lieutenant is, in fact, Vandal Savage's daughter, Scandal. Scandal Savage. What a name. Her first appearance, Drew, actually came in Villains United #1, which was one of the, I believe, four miniseries that led up to Infinite Crisis by Geoff Johns. And Villains United specifically focused on Lex and other villains kind of forming a secret society. That's the first issue. I have read that, and I didn't remember that that's the first time that she's popped up. So I thought that was kind of cool. We'll see how she plays out in this story. She seems like she's an agent for Vandal, but I am curious if that's going to last in that story.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about Doom Patrol because it's back. Tomorrow is going to be our first episode back, and I'm very excited about it. We're going to be reviewing it next week, so excited about Doom Patrol being back.
I can't wait. It's been so long.
All right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-455-8411. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got The Penguin, Unstoppable Doom Patrol, Green Arrow, Batman, The Brave and the Bold, Action Comics, Detective Comics, The Flash, Power Girl, Batman, Catwoman, The Gotham War, Red Hood, and Doom Patrol television show is back. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.